Bertus Basson is an entrepreneur. He's a restaurateur. He's the chef at Overture, which is his very posh restaurant. He's then also in charge of Bertus Basson, because he named it after himself, at Spice Root Wine Farm. He's got a restaurant in Stellenbosch called Speck and Buena. There's a food truck. There's a catering business. There's a TV show. Can you be a chef and have not have a TV show? Is it possible?
Of course you can. It's actually very possible.
Now, tell me about chefing. How many versions are there of you? Have I covered the landscape?
No, I think there's sort of three versions, to be honest with you. There's like the chef, me, the guy that loves going to his restaurants and cooking. Then there is sort of like a fast food guy, the guy that loves burgers and pizzas. And we actually got a little burger place called the Freya Burger in Stellenbosch.
The Freya Burger.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
But you charge for them.
Of course.
Of course.
The burger's not free, but the ice cream is. So we give free ice cream away with every burger. And then there's sort of another part of my life, which is like books and TV shows and things. And it's a different part of my life. But I think essentially I'm a chef. I like going to my restaurants and cooking.
Can you still be a chef, though? Because with so many different interests and so many variables, you've got different menus.
Sure.
And the food truck's a fundamentally different thing to the wine bar, which is fundamentally different to the five-star restaurant at Overture, for example.
Yeah. You know, it feeds me creatively in different ways. So I can go to Speck and Buena, the wine bar, and we can cook like fish heads with peri peri, which is delicious. And then we can go to Overture and we can sort of have this long discussion over what South African food really is and how do you use a pantry in different ways, or why do we not cure like they cure in the European country, like those sort of things. So we can really discuss food in different ways. And at Spice Street, we talk about South African food in its simple form without being chefy about it. So we want to make babu tea and delicious sweet potato and those sort of things. So it feeds me creatively in different ways to spend time in different environments. But it's all my environments, which is quite cool.
But when you are doing, I mean, it's hard enough, I think, having a theme. So if you go into a Gordon Ramsay restaurant, for example, you kind of know what you're getting. You're getting the guy you see on TV and you're getting that kind of food. You go to a Jamie Oliver restaurant, you know that you're getting that kind of food. With you, it's different disciplines. The menus are all very different. They're all very contained and quite small and focused, which makes life easier possibly.
Yeah.
But that's very different in every place. And so from a quality control perspective, from a cost control perspective, all of those things are complicated.
It all makes sense. You know, we buy food. And we use food in different ways. So our ingredients for bigger or smaller parts are pretty much the same in all the restaurants. We don't use different suppliers. It's the same butcher. It's the same vegetable supplier. We go to the Epping Market once a week to buy our own sort of large vegetables with our own vehicles and our own staff. So they all work. I think what's important to me is, you know, food is not one-dimensional. If a chef says, I only do one kind of thing, you know, it sort of limits you a little bit, don't you think? I think for me, the fun part about what we do, and we're talking about me, it's myself and my wife and our whole team, we all work together. The fun thing about what we do is we get to go from different spaces to different spaces constantly and do different things. And it's different styles, but the fundamental thing is it South African? This is who we are. Mm. And if we can't say that it's South African, then we sort of like, you know, either through the style of food or the ingredients or the way that we thought about this particular creative idea, then we lose interest. So it's not Japanese, it's South African. Mm. Then we're like, cool. So the underlying theme is always South African.
So we're never going to find sushi on any of your menus?
Hopefully not. And if I do, just call me and,
you know. Shout. Unless it's sort of Samp sushi or something along those lines.
Not even that, to be honest with you. I don't think it does justice to Samp.
No. Is it possible to make money out of restaurants?
Yes. You know, we do it a little bit differently. So we're not a big business. We have about 80 employees.
80?
80.
80, yeah.
And it varies from time to time, part of the time of the year, you know. We make a decent living. But our big thing is that we're still growing our business. We're not finished yet. And the reason we grow our business and growth is important to us, it helps us to grow. It helps me to grow, to do different things creatively and those sort of things. But it also helps people around me to grow. So I can sort of promote a sous chef to a head chef and a chef de partie to a sous chef and a floor supervisor becomes a manager. So one of our greatest joys is that the whole crew that runs the Freya Burger all used to be scullers. And we trained them to run the till. We trained the guys to grill. And I've got a whole team of people that
What's
run
a sculler?
They're dishwashers.
Oh, scullery workers. Yeah, okay, yeah. Scullers. Yeah. Okay, got you.
And they're like super
cool.
That's
fantastic.
Such a great crew. And they run a little restaurant on their own. And, you know, I pop in, you know, couple of, you know, every second day or so, and it's so lekker. Like, you know, so with us growing and the growth that we go through, it means that we can upskill, we can grow people with us. And I think that's quite important.
And you're watching talent all the time and figure out who you can place here when this 100%. Person goes off or disappears or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, so it's always what we do, but growth for us is important. Like, it's an important thing to do. I would hate to be in one space.
Who manages the finances of the various entities?
So myself, I'm very lucky. I think when you marry, you must marry well. And I married a chartered accountant. So my wife,
I'm sure she has good qualities too.
I keep her busy. My wife and myself work together. You know, I've sort of got a nose for restaurant cash flow and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. I'm not educated, to be honest, in finance or whatsoever, but I've sort of got a nose of how much money is going to cost. Something's going to cost me next week. And then Marley helps me with the more official things. So together we're quite a team.
But does she ever constrain your creativity? Does she dare? Does she
100%.
Does she become the Boone counter?
Sure. Not the Boone counter. She'll give me an honest opinion. So if I say, babe, let's do this amazing thing, it's going to cost so much. And she goes, no, dude, it doesn't sound amazing. and I've learned
you could do it at home
for
family, but not, yeah, but, not, but not I, for but paying learned, customers.
And her opinion is cool. Like when I wrote a recipe for a book, for my first book, I phoned up and said, I'm so excited about this recipe. It's amazing. And she goes, dude, you can't put that in the book. Sounds like, you know, nobody's got that equipment in their home. They can't make it at home. And, you know, and that's true. So Marley very much is my inspiration, but she can also luckily hold me back a little bit.
She stops you being too chefy.
Yeah, which is quite cool. And she keeps it real, you know.
Like how many books have you written?
So the second one's just finished.
Okay. Is it on the shelves?
Not yet. We're just editing now, and then we should be out later on this year.
How hard is that?
With this one, we wrote in season, and it was quite tough. You know, just to find the time to finish it is quite hard. We shoot with a great photographer, and I've also got a writer that helps me to write the book and a good design team. And it's not definitely not a one-man show. It's definitely a team of people that invest themselves.
But is the purpose to make money out of the books, or the books a brochure for the huge range of what you do?
Bruce, you know, interestingly enough, I think all chefs at one stage think, sure, I should write a cookbook. And it took me a long time to get there, like to get to the point where I said, all right, I want to write a cookbook. And when I did it, it wasn't a chefy cookbook. It was a book. My first book was called Homegrown. It's all about my inspiration as a South African chef of what I used to eat when I was a kid. So it's about the spur and soft serve ice creams, those sort of things. And it was a really cool experience to do it. And we decided to do a second one. The second one is a little bit different to the first one. But I think the inspiration is still just being South African.
Now, Spur have taken monkey gland sauce off the menu. I don't know if you know
no,
this.
I don't
it's
know.
A travesty.
It is a travesty.
But you've got a monkey gland glaze that you've used. I saw that on one of your menus.
So we do a few things, interestingly. So one of the things that we love doing is, I don't know if you've heard Denning Flace. You know, like a tamarind based sweet glaze, not a glaze, but uses a sauce to cook lamb or mutton in, and we sort of turned that into. It's very. I think it's like a South African barbecue sauce, like sweet and sour, slightly spicy, but it's very unique. The flavor, it's very unique to South Africa. I haven't come across it anywhere else in the world, to be honest with you, and that's delicious. So that's one sort of thing we use for basting, and then a monkey gland glaze. I think it's a cool thing. Instead of barbecue sauce, American style, we just have our own.
Exactly, Monkey Land. It's South African. And sure. Spur discontinued. Oof, they've got a lot to answer for. We had to talk more specifically about personal finance and Baptiste Besson and how, as an entrepreneur, as a restaurant owner, with huge cash flow pressure, because every new idea is going to cost lots of money to start the new idea, and restaurants are the restaurant public is quite fickle, and these things either work or they don't. So there's a high risk every time you start a new concept. How do you mitigate that risk? Do you invest, or do you take all the money you make and put it into the next big idea? More with Baptiste Besson in just a moment.
The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
My guest is Baptiste Besson. He is a cookbook writer. He has done TV shows. He's a restaurateur, predominantly around Stellenbosch. And he's been telling us how he does it. Money is easy to make, but also very easy to lose. But it's not necessary to be happy. Is that a life philosophy? 100%. Life philosophy.
Sure. Bruce, I think money for us is a tool that we can make our dreams come true. And our dreams are quite small. Like, you know, if we wake up one morning and say we want to open up a burger joint, and to make it happen doesn't cost a fortune, but we can make it happen. And it's such a joyous thing when it does happen. Mm. I think that's the fun bit.
Have you ever had one that hasn't worked?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a few things that we've done that we were like, sure, this is actually, it's not going to go anywhere. And usually when it happens when we're in partnerships, that becomes difficult. But everything that myself and Marley have taken on our own has worked, thank goodness. And we don't know why they work. You know, you people.
But surely you have an idea of what works.
Sure.
What works doesn't always work. Yeah. There is the why element, which is the artistry in the process.
I think the reality is that people often ask why restaurants work. Is it because of the nice view? Is it because of delicious food or a great wine list or good service? But I think it's because every restaurant, every space needs somebody who cares. If there's somebody who cares, then they work. So just somebody who walks through and says, cool, fresh water on the flowers today, watch that window over there, let's get together, guys, talk about today's menu, let's do a good briefing, like those little things that make it tick over. And that's what we are.
Which you can do if you're the owner, manager of a restaurant. Sure. But in order to get other people to do something they're not directly invested in,
yeah,
is that much harder?
It's you know, we've got a good team. So some of the guys that are with us have been with us for years. My right-hand woman, Adele, has been with me for 8 years. All the guys that run our restaurants started with me as commis chefs and trainees, and they've worked their way up.
You worked as a teenager. I beg your pardon. Let me just deal with this.
Sure.
Beg your pardon. You worked as a teenager at a restaurant I always wanted to go to in Wandsworth in London called Shea Bruce.
Sure.
Michelin star, could never afford it. But,
so, I'm going back there in June.
Are you?
Yeah.
To eat?
Yeah, love it. So not really as a teenager, I think I was 19 or 20 when I started working there.
Teenagers, 19's a teenager.
Yeah, and it was a really cool experience, and I think that's what shaped my opinion of what fresh ingredients can do. You know, coming from South Africa at that point, we didn't have amazing ingredients in, you know, like the late 1990s in South Africa. No. We're still sort of coming into a food.
But it's improved dramatically.
Massively. So I got to London and I got to see artichokes for the first time and those sort of things. And it was amazing. It was such a cool experience.
Now, money. I mean, clearly you say it's not the be all and end all. It's a useful tool to help you do new things and to expand your world, and you're married to a chartered accountant. Does she manage all the household money?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Does she do it well?
Yeah.
Does she invest it, or do you invest it together?
We invest together in various things. So it's not just money in the bank, to be honest with you. We obviously need retirement annuities and those sort of things. But investments for us is also like a little tiny bit of property, a tiny bit of art.
Kind of art?
Richard Scott, John O'Dry. Like really stuff that we love, and we never sell it. So it's the stuff that we gather, and we like looking at it, and then through our businesses, obviously every time we build a business, that's an investment for us that we have to keep going. Wine is a big investment for us.
Would carry large amounts of stock, wouldn't you?
So we buy and store wine. So we really started focusing on that about 3 years ago, I reckon, where we said, look, it's time to invest in a wine cellar, and it helps us to run better wine lists, so we can run multiple vintages of a certain wine from a certain grower, and that's also quite cool. So
do you have a central wine repository from which, when you're constructing your wine list, you'll send the cases to this restaurant rather than that
restaurant? We've sort of got two facilities at the moment. So one is in Somerset West, that's a temperature controlled facility, and one is at one of the other restaurants, it's also temperature controlled. And we those wines we sort of keep, and then we have wines that sell daily. So you can imagine, you know, some of the fast movers, a bit of Chenin from Flotsam and Jetsam, or, you know, one of the Sauvignon Blancs, we get those wines in sort of on a weekly basis.
How do people buy wine off a wine list? Tell me the secret, because there are lots of theories about this.
So I think for us, the thing is, we don't run massive markups on our wines. So we buy better wines, and we mark them up fairly. So, you know, I don't like it when we know a bottle of wine sells for $45, but it's sold for $200. I think that's not lacquer. So if you buy a bottle for $100, sell it for $200. That's a fair markup for me, you know. But I think a lot of it is price driven. But people in South Africa have become cool. It's become cool to drink delicious wine, and I think that's changed things. So people have, you know, people love Chenin, you know, especially in our restaurants. I love Chenin, so there's a lot of Chenins on the list.
And there's so much really good Chenin being made in the Swartland and in those sort of drier areas. There's really delicious profiles coming through.
Insane wine. So people, the way that people drink wine has changed. Instead of people going out and drinking three bottles of cheap wine, and they say, sure, we're going to invest tonight and we're going to experience one great wine. And that's quite cool.
And it's better for you, frankly.
Sure, 100%.
And you remember the meal.
Yeah, great stuff.
when it comes to investing, I mean, do you guys have a financial advisor? Do you do it yourselves directly? What's the approach?
So we do a few things directly, but you also, as you grow up and older, you sort of start talking to people, and you surround yourself with people. That doesn't work for us directly, but it's just people that we associate with. So we've got a great insurance guy. We've got a fantastic lawyer that we talk to if we need stuff. We've got a great investment guy. It's just because I'm a cook, I don't know. And there's something I shouldn't know. So if I need advice, I can phone somebody. Some of it we go directly to the investment houses, and they deal with it for us. But some of it we take under advice from other people.
Your restaurants have all worked. Have your money decisions all worked for you?
No, look, Bruce, you know, when I started my first business, I was 25 years old. And
what was that?
It was a little catering business in Somerset West. And, you know, I remember I was in Joburg one day and I got this phone call from my accountant and he said, "Hey, man, you've got to pay VAT tomorrow." And I said, "What's that?" You know, I've had to really school myself in just sort of the basics of finances. This is how our business is put together. This is your responsibilities as a business owner, VAT and tax and those sort of things. And it's all really important responsibilities, you know, it's quite important. So, I've had to go through the school of hard knocks and learn these things quite quickly. I should have asked for advice sooner.
And that's a great lesson for anybody. Sure. People sort of, they're so busy having fun and running the business and growing the business that they don't put the processes in place and the boring stuff.
100%. And it's very important.
Get caught short.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, as you're getting the scale and you're growing and you're doing nice things, you get distracted by the boring stuff.
100%.
Which is a real pain in the neck. Your first paying job, were you ever a waiter? Or did you go directly into chefing?
So as a child, I was a kid, my father's ex-bank manager. My mother always used to bake and hantakera. So I come from a working family. I started working quite early. I was a waiter at Spur. I was a waiter at Saddles. I worked in a liquor store at one stage doing the till as a kid, a toy store. And that was pocket money. So my parents from an early age was like, "Look, if you can have a weekend job, that's your pocket money, bro. Have a nice day." And that was the way it worked.
Would you put your kids through that as well? Would you encourage them to be waiters in other people's restaurants?
100%. 100%. I think it's important for learning social skills. It's important for learning where money comes from, even if it's a job that pays a few bucks an hour, whatever the case might be. It really is important to learn from a young age that doing something with your hands is okay. You know, like being a waiter is okay, and you can make a good living from it. So I'd encourage them to work from very early. Yeah.
What's the best money decision you've ever made?
Marrying my wife.
Yes. Okay.
No, I think the best thing we could have done was probably for myself and Molly to run our own businesses. So I had a fantastic business partner, but we decided to sort of go into separate directions, and it was sad at the time. But you know, we'd wanted to do different things. He wanted to calm down a bit. I wanted still to open restaurants, and I think that was probably cool. It was cool that we could bridge that sort of scenario in one piece and move forward. It was good for me and Molly. You know, we do everything together, and it's been awesome for us.
Bad worst money decision ever. Open a restaurant.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, like we haven't had many bloopers, but we've done things like bought loads of wine that was on the edge, and then you lose all that stock and that sort of stuff. You know, like we make those sort of mistakes.
Do people send wine bottles of wine back in restaurants?
Look, sometimes wines are corked, and it's not the winemaker's fault. It's not the farm's fault. It's just that particular bottle is corked, and it happens. And all we can do is smile and say, "Sure," and we'll take the bottle back. We'll open up another one, and that's cool. You know, that's part of wine drinking. You know, wine is alive. You know, and if the bottle's corked, the bottle's corked. So we've made those sort of things. You know, sometimes you buy, I bought too much of stuff. Like a weird thing. I went to the Epping Market. I realized that the vegetables there were really cheap, so I bought a truckload full. And I got back to the restaurant, and the guys were like, "Dude, what are we going to do with all of this?" I said, "But it's so cheap." And, you know, you lose a lot then.
Yeah,
that's just unfortunately the way it is.
What's the most you've ever paid for a restaurant meal?
Myself, I was lucky enough to go to Osteria Franciscana, Massimo Bottura, a few years ago, and Abigail Donnelly helped us get a table there from Etart at the time. We couldn't get a table. I wasn't famous enough to go eat there. But it was an incredible meal, and it was about 12,000 bucks.
Per head?
No, for two of us.
Well, that's cheap at the price. Was it worth it?
It was life-changing. It was life-changing, yeah. It was an incredible experience.
I love how people describe food as life-changing. That's what Baptiste Basson tries to do in his everyday life. He's an entrepreneur. He is a restaurateur, chef at Overture, Baptiste Basson at Spice Route, and also a restaurant called Speck and Buena, plus a whole bunch of other projects and a new one to come as well. He's not a guy who sits still much.